This is The Takeaway. I'm John Hockenberry. Thanks so much for listening. On three fronts, the Middle East is aflame. And on the same three fronts, a perilous web of diplomacy attempts to minimize the civilian cost. A pause, we learned today, in the fighting in Iraq to retake the city of Mosul from ISIS, an offensive which tests more than a decade of policies trying to build an Iraq that can go it alone. It also threatens 1.2 million civilians hoping to be free of ISIS's rule. The catastrophe in Aleppo, Syria, is unabated, even as Russia and the U.S. and others attempt to try yet another ceasefire agreement. The situation in war-torn and poverty-stricken Yemen has reached a level of urgency where a 72-hour ceasefire has been declared by the United Nations. The news came after the release of American hostages over the weekend and an exchange of missile fire late last week between American forces and Houthi rebels, marking the very first time the United States has directly attacked the rebels in Yemen's 20-month civil war. Here's Secretary of State John Kerry.
But we cannot emphasize enough today the urgency of ending the violence of Yemen, of providing for an opportunity for a political settlement, which is the only way it will be ultimately resolved.
The United Nations has reported that more than 10,000 people have been killed since the start of the fighting, and more than half of the population of Yemen does not have enough food. The U.S. is nominally part of the coalition with Saudi Arabia that has created these famine conditions. Is the U.S. on the side of catastrophe? Christine Beckerley is a Yemen and Kuwait researcher for the Middle East and North Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. She joins me now from Amman, Jordan, and says that's a profoundly difficult question to answer.
I would say that the conflict in Yemen is quite complicated because it's really not just what we've been seeing since March 26, 2015, when the Saudi-led coalition that you mentioned began its aerial campaign in Yemen, but it's really a lot of local grievances that have been going on for a very long time that have festered into a real serious armed conflict in Yemen right now. That being said, what we can say at this point is that you have the Saudi-led coalition, which has been carrying out an aerial campaign against the Houthis and their allies, including forces loyal to former President Ali Abdullah Saleh, since March 26, 2015. And that aerial campaign itself has truly been devastating for Yemen. And that's the side on which the U.S. has been involved and providing weapons to since for over a year and a half now.
Is it the case that the U.S. opposes Iran in this Yemen situation? The Houthis are perceived to be proxies of Iran, which would put the U.S. both on the side of Iran and against Iran in various conflicts. That also complicates matters.
I think a lot of people have taken to describing it as a proxy war, but I think that's actually a misrepresentation as far as we know of what's going on, because the Houthis and their allies, including, like I said, forces loyal to former President Ali Abdullah Saleh, these are really local Yemeni groups that have been present in the Yemeni political landscape for a very long time and have their own sort of domestic grievances that have led us to where we are today. So to describe it as a proxy war, a sectarian war, I think is really to obfuscate what is actually going on in Yemen right now.
Let's talk about the humanitarian situation. Yemen, of course, is one of the poorest nations in the world. How has this fighting complicated the ability of getting aid to civilians?
It's very hard to describe in words how terrible the humanitarian situation in Yemen is right now. It was already quite bad before March 26, 2015, when the Saudi-led aerial campaign began. But now it's really at crisis levels.
For outsiders looking at the Middle East, you've got three serious situations. I'm wondering if you could evaluate them for us as someone who's an observer of the region. You've got the invasion of Mosul, the attempt to retake it from ISIS, and the humanitarian potential for disaster there with 1.2 million civilians in Mosul. You've got the situation in Aleppo, which has gone on now for so long between opposition forces to Syrian President Bashar al-Assad, and then the Yemeni situation you've just described. Are all the three of these of the equal significance, or is one more important than the other?
I wouldn't say that one is more important than the other. What I would say is that you're looking across the region at a number of, again, not to mince words, but really humanitarian catastrophes, and that what I would hope is that you're looking at a bunch of situations where laws of war violations have really continued on with impunity. And what I would hope is that looking at that and looking at what we've been seeing over the last you know, a couple of years now, that the powers that be would be taking seriously the fact that this cannot be allowed to continue in the way in which it has. If we do care about international law and we do care about civilian protection, because not only in Yemen, but in Syria and Iraq, you're really looking at situations where these things have been allowed to continue for a long time, and that cost is becoming sort of incalculable.
Christine Beckerle is a Yemen and Kuwaiti researcher for the Middle East and North Africa Division of Human Rights Watch. She spoke to me from Amman, Jordan. Christine, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Let's get some perspective now from Barbara Bodine, who was U.S. ambassador to Yemen from 1997 to 2001. She is currently director of the Institute for the Study of Diplomacy at Georgetown University. Welcome, Ambassador.
Thank you.
How are we to sort out whose side the United States is on in Yemen, if there is a side that can be declared clearly for the U.S. to be on?
That is not as simple, straightforward a question as it may sound. I suppose we are on the side of a legitimate government in Yemen, and that has been our goal since the beginning. It is the goal of the UN Security Council, which passed a resolution about 18 months ago to restore the legitimate government, and it is the stated goal of the coalition. I think where it becomes a bit more murky is a question of how do you get to the restoration or the establishment of, because those are not the same, of a legitimate government in Yemen.
Has the coalition behaved in a way that you would describe as militarily appropriate? Human Rights Watch declared that the coalition was involved in the bombing of a funeral service and that that would include possible United States involvement.
Not only did Human Rights Watch declare that the coalition was responsible for the bombing of a funeral hall, and we're talking about over 140 dead and several hundred wounded, the Saudis have taken responsibility for that. They said that it was an error in intelligence. The United States has been actively supporting this military campaign since the beginning. We provide assistance at headquarters. The U.S. Air Force flies refueling on behalf of the Saudi Air Force. And so we have been very actively involved in this campaign.
How would you say the attempt to release hostages, which the U.S. did successfully over the weekend, and also its own what were described as appropriate airstrikes by the White House, operations that are different from or the same as the coalition operations in Yemen?
Well, we were able to secure the release of a number of our citizens, hostages, and I think credit needs to go to the Omani government for having made those arrangements. The cruise missile strike that you mentioned was described by the U.S. Navy as a narrow act of self-defense. And I think what they were signaling with that is that they would certainly take action against the Houthi, who are the rebels or the insurgents, if they did fire on U.S. Navy ships. But I think by describing it as a narrow act, they were also signaling that we really have no desire or intention, unless significantly provoked, to get directly militarily involved in this.
And you would describe it as a catastrophe, as others in the region have?
Absolutely. What Yemen is facing at this point, I think, can best be described as an imposed famine. This is not due to climate. This is not due to just the kind of usual governmental mismanagement. In the course of this campaign, the port facilities have been damaged, the roads, the bridges, the airports have been closed. And a country that was, in the best of times, dependent on food imports, medicine, water, and fuel, has been essentially under siege. There is no medicine coming in. There is no food. I think it's over 100 medical facilities have been destroyed. The water treatment plants have been destroyed. The power grid has been destroyed. So this was a country that was already the poorest country in the Middle East, and its infrastructure no longer exists, and nothing is coming in. That is a catastrophe.
Ambassador Bodin, forgive me if I'm missing something here, but you've described a set of situations where the U.S. has allowed itself to be part of a coalition that has produced an imposed famine in one of the poorest nations in the world, a place the U.S. would normally be supplying aid to, and at the same time, we maintain our own ability to take potshots at al-Qaeda in eastern Yemen. How could the United States have gotten involved in such a human rights disaster?
Well, that's not a question. I'm not a party to the policy deliberations in the U.S. government any longer. I do think that I assume that at least in the beginning, in March of 2015, there was a belief that with limited airstrikes, limited military involvement on the part of the Saudis and their Arab coalition partners, that the legitimate government, the Hadi government, could be returned to power, and the insurgents, the Houthis, who at that time had already swept as far south as Aden, would be dislodged. And I think what has happened is that this has just continued to grind on in a way that people did not fully anticipate. And as I said, I think it is important to note that we have been working at the same time with the Saudis, with others, with the British, to come up with a cessation in hostilities so that the humanitarian crisis can be addressed. And we were the U.S. government, were very actively involved in trying to get the peace talks, which ran from about April until August. And we're still trying to do that. But there is you are quite right, there is a bit of a disconnect between what we are trying to do diplomatically, what we want to do on the humanitarian side, and our continued involvement and support for the Saudi campaign. There is a disconnect.
What do you make of the 72-hour ceasefire announced by the UN?
I think 72 hours is better than nothing, but it's not going to address the humanitarian problem. As I said, the ports have been knocked out, the roads are knocked out. So even if you had a 72-hour cessation, you don't have time to get food into the ports. You don't have the ability to get them into the major population areas, which are all inland. They're not coastal cities. You would also have to be able to fly in medicine. So 72 hours is a good start, but it's not really going to do very much.
I can certainly hear the frustration in your voice, Ambassador. Barbara Bodin was U.S. Ambassador to Yemen from 1997 to 2001. She's currently Director of the Institute for the Study of Diplomacy at Georgetown University. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.